Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special edition focusing on the Bataan Death March as we mark the 81st anniversary of that infamous war crime in the Philippines. This is the first year that there's just one known living survivor of the march, and I say known because it's always possible somebody's out there but not exactly looking to dive into this painful piece of history. All the stories we're hearing today are from men who are no longer with us, but found the courage to share these memories because they did not want this chapter of history to be forgotten. Some of our listeners in Eastern Washington might remember Bud Kirchhoff, a native of Illinois who had joined the National Guard in 1936. He arrived in the Philippines right around Thanksgiving in 1941 with the 192nd Tank Battalion. And Bud reminded us that Pearl Harbor and the other military installations on the island of Oahu were not the only targets struck by the Japanese on December 7th, 1941.
I was only 100 yards from Clark Field when it was bombed, so we were vulnerable, especially in the dive bombers, which were also strafing and things like that. So,
what did that feel like? What went through your mind when you saw these planes coming in and everything's blowing up in front of your eyes?
Well, I don't know that you could say you think. You just react. You just do what you have to do. What happened was that right after the bombing took place, not right after, but a few days later, they had a landing party at Lingayen Gulf. That's where the Japanese landed. Our group went up there. I wasn't in that particular action because I was on detached service to the MPs. And so when they finally got back there, then I left the MPs because I didn't need them anymore. And I got back in the tank again. But that was where the actual land fighting started, was Lingayen Gulf. And they moved gradually back to where we all that could get there were in Bataan, and that's where the peninsula of Bataan, and that's where we retreated to. And we defended there for, April 9th we surrendered. So I think 4 months that we were actually in combat mode.
How intense was that? Did you spend most of that inside a tank? Or where
good,
were you?
Good part of it, yeah.
Did that make you feel fairly safe, or did you feel like you were a target?
Actually, they aren't safe. They're nothing safe but a tank, because they're the first object of their try to destroy, see. So a jungle is no place for tank warfare, let me tell you. So we were kind of hamstrung in the tank warfare and the infantry. So then, April 9th, we surrendered, and I got a little story. I was still in my tank when we surrendered.
Did you know that was coming? Did you have a pretty good idea that this was going to happen?
We knew that we were surrendered. We weren't really, what do you call it? Anyway, we surrendered as a whole entity,
right,
the whole group, which was different than just surrendering as an individual or group, small group. So they had us burn our tanks, to butt plates off the guns, and open the gas tanks. And we had aircraft engine fuel in there, so, it burned in a hurry. Anyway, we all got in this truck, and we were going back to where we were getting together anyway. And somebody didn't tell the Japanese that we had surrendered. So here come two Zero fighters strafing, and you never saw a truck empty so fast in all your life.
Holy cow.
Yeah, they were straight. I don't know that anybody, I didn't get hit. I guess a couple of them got hit. So then I didn't go back to that truck again. I wandered through the woods until I got to our group. So we're sitting alongside the road, and the major in charge of maintenance came along and said, "Hey, you guys want to come with me?" And I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "We're going back to the maintenance department and get some clothing and canteens, and if there's any food, we'll bring it back." So I went with him, another fellow, there were three of us. So there's a beautiful blue Buick, about a 1939 or 1940. So we took all the stuff that we had collected and put it in the trunk and in the back seat. And we're driving back, and I was driving, and all of a sudden a little got out in front of us, and he stopped. And so he said, "Follow me," or didn't say it. He just motioned. Mm-hmm. So we wandered over under a huge tree that must have been an 8-foot trunk or 10-foot trunk of the tree, and it was like a house under there. Was heavy branches were 10-15 feet wide on each side. Under this tree, sitting a guy in a beautiful white uniform. It was a general.
A Japanese general.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so we figured we're dead ducks. We were stealing their stuff because they owned it now that we were surrendered to them. All that guy wanted was the car. And I don't blame him. You know, he's a general. He's right to, entitled to a private vehicle.
Brand new, nice-looking American car.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we figured we were going to get shot for sure. But only when we had to take all this stuff out of this car and carry it back to where we were stationed on the long side of the road. So that was one of those things that was funny, but it could have been deadly. So the worst part about the death march was the debilitating effects of the lack of food for the last 4 months, small amounts of food that we had, and just being in the Philippines. Now, like I say, we were only there for 18 days before the war started, so we weren't even acclimated to the difference between being in Chicago and being in Manila. There had been a directive come down to fight to the end, and this general who surrendered us, General King, said he wasn't going to do that, and so he surrendered us to the Japanese, and that's, of course, when they moved us out of Bataan and into Camp O'Donnell. More men died in the Camp O'Donnell than they did on the march, and the reason for that, by then, their reserves strength had been exhausted to a point where they were too vulnerable to everything, any disease. I got diphtheria, among other things. Diphtheria is a dangerous thing. It's very high, you know, high temperature and stuff like that. So, and I was the last one in the group to get a toxin antitoxin, which is what you fight diphtheria with. See, so mm-hmm. It was touch and go there for a while. I went to Japan in 1943, Omuta, which is at Fukuoka area, and we were coal mining.
So you were on the Bataan Death March, then you're in two different camps in the Philippines and three more camps in Japan. And you had entered the service, a strapping young Chicago boy of 200 pounds?
About 210.
210. After the march, how much did you weigh?
Well, at the end of the march, when I had the pneumonia, I was about 100 pounds, a little under 100 pounds. Didn't quite get to the 100 mark. But then by at the end of the war, I was up to 128.
What kept you going through all that? Was it the interaction with your fellow prisoners? Was it a faith that grounded you? What kept you focused on someday this is going to be over? Because 3.5 years, that's a lot of days to try to keep hope alive and stay positive.
Well, I didn't have a philosophy, as you know, but I did, but I didn't know it, and I just did one day at a time. Just worried about that day because yesterday was gone and tomorrow ain't here yet. So I had the philosophy, if you want, of taking it one day at a time. And the fellows who didn't, that worried about what's going to happen and think about home and everything, they're the ones that didn't make it, see.
That was the late Bud Kirchhoff, survivor of the Bataan Death March and 3.5 years of captivity afterwards during World War II. It's time now for our final break, but when we come back, another American and also a Filipino soldier who have shared their memories from Bataan with us. Go to hometownheroesradio.com for links to all their original interviews. 81 years ago this weekend, the Bataan Death March began. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,500 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.